This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We live in a digital world until you enter most public school classrooms. There, pencil and paper, chalk, chalkboards, and erasers still rule, but not in Mooresville. While other school systems are struggling with how to integrate digital technology into education and to find the money to do so, the Mooresville Graded School District has already done it. In Mooresville, over 4,500 laptop computers have been deployed to every 4th through 12th grade student who then have access to these devices 24/7 throughout the school year. Digital interactive smart boards, smart slates, and smart response devices, whatever they are, and we'll find out later, have been placed in every K through 3 classroom in the district. The result of all this has been overwhelmingly positive and has added to the district's image here and around the country. Some education experts have referred to the Mooresville Graded School District as the best in the country. Here to talk more about why the district decided to move in this direction before most other systems and about the impact digital technology is having on education in Mooresville is Dr. Mark Edwards, superintendent of the Mooresville Graded School District. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to the session today.
Thank you. And also with us is Scott Smith, who returns to the program. He's chief technology officer for the Mooresville Graded Schools. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mike.
You have, as I said, a laptop computer in the, well, you have a laptop computer in the logo for your school system, encircled with the words, every child, every day. How important would you say this technology is to the process of successfully educating 21st century children?
Well, it's, Mike, it's been a critical part of our culture and our academic equation. We're in our sixth year of this deployment. And actually, we also have a laptop now for every third grader, although they don't take them home, but we do have a one-to-one. And the use of digital resources aligned with our teacher leadership has been the key to our success. And we've really changed the pedagogical approach in classrooms, how teachers teach, how students learn, and the highly engaged atmosphere, the sense of discovery, learning every day has really just revitalized our classrooms. There's energy, there's excitement for both teachers and students, and we really believe we're on the right track with this.
Well, you were early to the party, so to speak, because evidently other systems are still struggling to figure this out and find money, as I said, and figure out how to use these devices in the classroom. But you decided to do this, as you said, 6 years ago. Why? What made you think this was the right thing to do and that was the right time to do it?
Well, 7 years ago, Mike, I had served previously as superintendent in Henrico County, Virginia, a district that wraps around Richmond, Virginia. And back during my service in that district, back in 2000, we deployed 26,000 laptops to all 6th through 12th graders in that district. And I like to refer to Mooresville on the cutting edge. And back that time in Henrico, we were on the bleeding edge. We were really way out front. But it was clearly the right thing to do, and we saw great opportunity in that initiative. And actually, when I interviewed in Mooresville 7 years ago, the school board at that time had interest in this. They had done their homework in terms of reference checking, and they asked the question, could we do this? And my response is that if there was a collective will, both from intra-school community and then the community as a whole, that I certainly felt like there was a great probability that we could move in this direction. And shortly after starting as superintendent, we started the wheels turning on the preparations to get ready to do something like
this.
So
you embarked on this, what you call a digital conversion initiative. Scott Smith, you're the chief technology officer in charge of all this equipment and rolling it out and figuring out how it's all going to interface with everything else. Was there a chief technology officer prior to this in the Mooresville school district, or did you come on board as a result of this?
There was that position, but I came on board about a year after Dr. Edwards did to help bring this initiative to life. But and we call it a digital conversion on purpose, though. It's not about the box. It's not about the piece of technology. Now, whereas that gives us potential that we never had before, and it lets us reach students in whole new ways, we don't concentrate on the technology. We concentrate on changing that teaching and learning environment and changing the pedagogy, as Dr. Edwards was saying. We want to be able to reach all students, and it really goes back to our motto of every child, every day. I am the technology guy, and I get into the gadgets and gizmos, but this is really concentrating on changing that teaching and learning environment.
But, you know, all of us have spent many hours at a computer, at least I have. And computers, as wonderful as they are, can also be nightmares when things don't go right and you can't figure it out. And I know you live in the Mac world, and things are supposed to be better in the Mac world than they are in the PC world. But still, when you're rolling out 4,500 laptops, or I think it's up to 6,000 now, isn't it?
Pretty close, yes.
And all these smart devices that that we'll talk about, that's a lot of technology to keep track of and to keep up to actual running snuff. I mean, how do you maintain all these computers?
Absolutely. It's one of those things that it takes constant vigilance, and we're always, you know, working on planning for what's upcoming and maintaining what we have. You know, we have great technology personnel to help support those devices, not only from a technical standpoint, but from an instructional standpoint in helping our teachers integrate them in class. But, you know, we haven't it hasn't always been smooth. We've had bumps in the road, but, you know, it's how we deal with those and move forward. As you mentioned, we are a Mac district, and that does make my life a little easier for us, I do believe. But, you know, we constantly are working to better the technology and better the infrastructure and the connectivity and all those things for our teachers and students. You know, in my role as chief technology officer and our expectations for the district, you know, we expect folks to use this tool that's been provided for them. So the absolute worst thing we could do is give them this device and have set these expectations and then it not work. So it's my job to make sure it works. And so we play all different scenarios. We do a lot of testing before we roll something out. And that includes a lot of prior planning. Very far in advance, as Dr. Edwards said, we started that planning process long before we ever handed out a device. So that part is vitally important to keeping things up and running and getting them deployed and working on a daily basis.
Scott mentioned, Dr. Edwards, that this digital conversion initiative is more than just the machines, just the technology. It has to do with a lot of different pieces. Describe what you mean when you say digital conversion initiative.
Well, sure, Mike, and I do think that it's interesting. We have had visitors now from 42 states, other countries, and have a backlog of hundreds of requests for visitors to come in. And all the guests that come in from around the United States and other countries, they come in primarily expecting to observe technology in use. They leave 100% of the time talking about our culture. And so the interface of using digital resources with understanding change management in an organizational culture and how we troubleshoot. You know, one of the things, the prior question, you know, how do you make all this stuff work? Well, sometimes things don't work, but we have learned individually and collectively to troubleshoot through issues. We've learned how to handle turbulence. And so part of that process is building within the culture, within teachers and students and our administrative staff, getting comfortable with kind of being uncomfortable when things don't work. Okay, let's troubleshoot this and figure it out. And it's real interesting. Our students are just this calm reassurance to teachers that, hey, you can do this. We can work through it. And visitors talk about it all the time. They say, wow, these kids, they're on top of this. So, you know, one of our challenges is to stay on a level field with our students. Mm-hmm. But I do think that creating this culture where there's this sense of a collective energy about the future. And I do think a real factor here that's a driving impetus for our success has been that students see the connectivity between what they're doing in class today and their future. They see a real, you know, it's almost a visual that's almost that you can feel it. There's this connection, and that changes everything in the class. When kids go to school and they feel like they're dull and bored out and it's not connected, then they're, you know, they don't see the purpose. But when they see this connected, it's huge.
I read a story that you tell that is, I think, illustrative of this, because so many kids say, well, why do I have to learn this? How am I going to use this? But when you're connected in real time to events, it takes it up a whole new level. And you talk about these kids that you saw running in the hallway to get back to class, leaving recess early because they were following earthquakes around the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the whole the integration of the world into the classroom, and the only way you can do that to the level that we have with real-time information data and phenomena is in a digital world. And a few years ago, I was visiting one of our intermediate schools, and I saw some boys running down the hallway, and I went, whoa, guys, slow down. And they said, Dr. Harris, come in there. You won't believe what's happened. They ran to this classroom, and they said, we've been studying earthquakes around the world, and we came in because we know ones that we just think it's going to happen today. And they pulled up on their laptops, pulled up this website, and they this light immediately started blinking, and they started jumping. They said, it's happening right now. It's happening. The other kids came in the class, and they were all, guys, we saw it. We were here when it actually happened. And everybody was kind of – it was this huge, surreal excitement. And I really think that that type of energy around real-world phenomena is something that our students expect today.
And you can't get that from a textbook, can you?
No. And I used to work – I've spent a couple of years working for a big publisher, and I think that there's always value in print. Mm-hmm. We still read novels in Mooresville. But I will tell you, we did stop buying textbooks about 5 years ago. And I know my son, who's in the eighth grader, he proudly says he's never brought a textbook home. And maybe he wouldn't either anyway. But in Mooresville, our students rely on digital content.
The Mooresville graded schools rank 100 out of 115 in North Carolina in terms of per pupil funding. But you rank third in graduation rate and second in academics. All of this is due to digital conversion?
Well, I would say, Mike, again, it's a product of a multifaceted approach. One, the digital resource has been key, because one of the things that we're still learning, but we really do have a foundation knowledge, is that using real-time data about students, and not just for teachers, but students mapping out their own progression of work, and they have real-time information. When they take an assessment, they get that information back immediately, and then they can use that. So I do think that it's a combination.
So when you say assessment, that's a test?
Yeah, a what I would call a formative assessment, which is a short, kind of like what we would call back in our time, a pop quiz.
So they get the grade instantly.
They get it back instantly, and then they are monitoring their own learning. I like to share this story. We had a big visit group in, and then one guy was talking to the little boy in the fourth grade, and they said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm working on my reading. And he said, well, how's it going? He said, I'm doing great. He said, well, how do you know? And he said, well, let me pull up. I'll show you my profile, and you can see it. And the little boy turned to the guest, and he said, now, do you understand what a trajectory is? And the guy said, yeah, I think I understand. He said, good, I'm going to show you my trajectory. So the little boy could show on the screen. He said, you see that blue line? That's where I started, and this is where I am today. And the guy goes, wow, you're had a grade level. He goes, yeah, but look at that green line. That's where I'm going. He said, well, you'll be way above grade level. Do you really think you can do it? He said, I know I can do it because I'm mapping it. I'm watching it myself.
Wow. So it's a motivator and a math tool because he knows how to read a graph.
Absolutely.
I only have 30 seconds. Where did you find the money for all of this?
Well, I'm going to share a big secret. We found it within our operating budget.
All right. I'll stop you there, and we'll talk about that, because you say that the equipment should not be part of capital expenses. It should be part of your operating budget. And a lot of people who don't understand how big organizations are budgeted may not understand that, but we'll shed some light on that and some other things as well with Dr. Mark Edwards, superintendent of the Mooresville Graded School District, and the chief technology officer, Scott Smith. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Wine Vault, hosting a wine tasting of over 21 Spanish red wines at Founders Hall, February 11th from 6 to 8. Reservation 704-548-WINE. And Henderson Properties, providing real estate sales and property management throughout the Charlotte region for 20 years. HendersonProperties.com. Dietary supplements are everywhere. They're on grocery store shelves, they're on health food store shelves, they're on drugstore shelves, they're advertised on television. Perhaps you take them. But a new study indicates that some of these supplements may do little for us and could even cause damage or death. And that's because they are largely unregulated by the FDA until somebody dies. We're going to talk about that from the lead researcher of the study and someone from the FDA tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, actor Philip Seymour Hoffman's death from an apparent heroin overdose has shocked us all. What's behind the sharp rise in heroin use in the U.S. and debate over what to do about it.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with the 2013 North Carolina Superintendent of the Year, Dr. Mark Edwards, the super of Mooresville Graded School District. He was also, by the way, Superintendent of the Year in Virginia when he was in Virginia. Scott Smith, Chief Technology Officer at the Mooresville Graded School District. And we're talking to them because they have embarked many years ago now, six, 7 years ago, on digital conversion, and they now have a track record which is being studied by other school districts across the country, and it's darn successful, actually. All right, let's go back to the money, because this, when you buy 6,000 laptop computers and you put these smart devices in the classrooms that don't have these computers, that's a lot of money, and you take it from your operating and not your capital budget. Why, and how do you get away with that?
Well, you know, Mike, one of the things that when we first started this and we looked at it, not just from an immediate implementation, but a long-term plan, we actually, from our early days, mapped out a 10-year plan. And we knew that we could not rely on any type of grant or external funding. As a matter of fact, we've only had one grant back 60 years ago, received a $250,000 grant from Lowe's, and at the same time, they distributed that same grant to all the districts around us. But we build it within our internal budget. We spend a little over $7,000 per student per year. And to provide the hardware, the content, the maintenance, the professional development, for all of that, we spend a little bit less than $200 per student per year. So we take roughly, we say, all right, $200 per year out of $7,000. And so we earmarked that, we embedded it into the budget, and we have stuck with it. And it's enabled us, even back 3 years ago when we had to cut 10% of our workforce. But we were able to stay on track with this and have built a long-term plan. Now, we did use capital dollars for the infrastructure, for the wireless. But everything else is within our operating budget. And we advise districts that are looking at this model, and there's several hundred that have used this model, to build it with a repurposing of existing dollars rather than trying to rely on external dollars.
Would textbooks have come out of your operating budget?
Yes, it would have.
So
yes.
Since you're no longer buying textbooks, that's helping toward the computers.
Absolutely, yes. That's a key factor.
Was there any pushback in – because, yes, you say you were on the bleeding edge of this in Virginia. Any pushback in Virginia or in Mooresville from those who questioned the need – to move toward this technology? I mean, people do still say, why do we need to move toward digital when we've used pen and paper and books and chalkboards for centuries?
Well, you know, back in Virginia in 2000, it was interesting. It truly was a time where this seemed pretty foreign. But at the same time, we had some of the same issues. We had a digital divide. We had students who had access to technology, students who did not. We had students who had access to educational amenities and students that did not. Now, we had what I would call a lot of resistance just from the concept, but yet a lot of buy-in from a lot of individuals who embraced it and a lot of support. As a matter of fact, back in Henrico County in 2003, Steve Jobs came to the district to do our keynote address, which was really kind of a great event for us. But when I came to Mooresville, the board said, you know, we have a digital divide, and we have students who do not have access to information. So a lot of the factors were there. And I'll have to say that a lot of the planning, the groundwork, the great work that Scott Smith, our CTO, and others have done, principals, teachers, enabled us to build momentum fairly quickly. And within a couple of years, we could see a major change in our teachers' attitudes and dispositions.
Given all of the requirements that have been placed on teachers here and around the country by the federal government and the state government and Common Core, et cetera, and the testing, to take more time out of the classroom to teach how to work a computer seems to be difficult to find that time. And if you have a digital divide, that means that there are young people who've never touched a computer perhaps before or never been exposed to one for any length of time, or who maybe have a PC at home but you're using Mac. So, Scott, how do you bring both the students who are in that position and the teachers who may have been a little reluctant to jump into this pool of water, how do you bring them up to speed quickly and still have enough time to teach what has to be taught?
A great question, Mike. And professional development has been key for our teachers and our leadership in the district. You know, when this idea was sold to the community and our school board was on board, they were great in that they gave us 6 early release days. And what I mean by that is students are dismissed at noon and then teachers attend professional development for the afternoon. Time is always an issue to get that teacher training in. And, you know, teachers don't want to stay after school and Saturdays don't work very well. So, you know, when the school board gave us those 6 early release days where we could do teacher training during the school hour and students are released to go home, that was huge for us. But that you have to have that community piece so that parents understand, you know, why you're doing this for your teachers. And I think one of the things Dr. Edwards used to say was, you know, if you go to the doctor, don't you want your doctor to, you know, have the best knowledge they can to treat you as a patient? And everybody, of course, says yes. Well, why would you not want that for your teacher of your child? So selling that to the community in terms of what we're doing, and it's been extremely popular. Our teachers have liked it, so much so that a couple of years ago, our school board increased the number of early release days so that we have 1 per month. Basically, we have 10 a year now. And we have professional development ongoing throughout the year.
I would imagine now that it's not just about how to make the computer work or how to get into the operating system if something goes wrong. Now I would think it's more about how to use it as a tool.
Sure, absolutely. There was at the very beginning, there was, you know, we were going from a PC district to a Mac district, so we were doing some training about Macs and how to use it. But very quickly, it came to the point that we needed to train teachers on how to use this tool in instruction. It wasn't about the device again. It was about, you know, okay, I'm an 8th grade social studies teacher, and all my kids have access to the world at their fingertips. How can I best utilize that tool to meet the needs of my students while still, you know, meeting the needs of the assessments and the state test and all those types of things? So it's a complete paradigm shift for our teachers. The kids, they bought right in. It didn't take them long at all. You know, that's their world. They're growing up in this digital age. So it was very easy for them. For teachers, it was a little more of a challenge. But, you know, 6 years later, we can look back and say, wow, we've come a long way with our teacher preparation.
And, you know, Mike, I was talking to just recently some of our students. We were looking at some new software we were using, and we had tested it with students and teachers. And we asked the teachers. They tried it out. We said, what do you think? They said, we love it. And we said, how long do you think it'll take before you guys will be really comfortable with this? And they said, yeah, you know, give us 2 or 3 training sessions, 2 or 3 months, 4 or 5 months, we're going to be good to go. And we went, great. You know, what great attitudes. Then we had some students who had tested out. We asked them the same thing, and they said, well, it's kind of clunky, but we can make it work. And we said, how long do you think it'll take? They said, it's going to take forever. And we said, really? They said, yeah, how long? They said, well, if you get us on Friday, Monday we'll be ready to go. And that was, and both groups were pretty much on target. It took the kids about a weekend, and it took our teachers and staff a few months. But I think that's kind of the differential. And it also, I think the students are turbocharging our changing culture with their vision and their dispositions about the future.
You know, how does that flips education on its ear, on its head, because you've got students who really are comfortable in this world and who sometimes know a lot more about computers. Most of the time, know a lot more about computers
That's right.
than adults. And you have teachers who have traditionally been in charge of the classroom. Well, suddenly you flip that equation on its head, at least technologically speaking. So how have you changed? How have teachers dealt with that? And how have you changed the way they teach? And how has the way students learned changed as a result?
Well, Mike, as an educator, you know, I can say teachers by nature are kind of control freaks. We we like to have control of our classroom and that type of thing. But when you move into this environment, it's about giving up control. Mm. And it's about allowing students the freedom to be creative and to give you information instead of, okay, go write a 3-page paper. All right, do a project, or here's a rubric of how we're going to assess your learning. show me what you've got, and you give kids that ability, that completely changes things. But it's, for a teacher, it's about giving up that control of the classroom. And it's uncomfortable at times. But again, over time, they start to realize, hey, if we let these kids kind of drive the bus, they will do amazing things. And the student engagement that we see now, because kids have control of their own creativity, it's amazing in terms of what happens.
Have you lost teachers because they just didn't want to, they just weren't interested in doing it this way?
Well, you know, Mike, I would say back, this goes back 6-7 years ago, we probably lost a few, mainly to early retirement, mm-hmm. but I do recall one of our math teachers who taught at Mooresville High School, and he had taught 30 years in Pennsylvania before relocating to Mooresville. He was in his 42nd year of teaching, and he after he really embraced this, and he said, you know, I had planned to retire, but I can't. I am on fire with this. I'm doing the best teaching of my life. And to tell you the truth, what we are seeing now is that teachers seek us out from districts all over North Carolina and from other places. They've heard about it. They want to be a part of the equation of the future. So they really do see this. And now, to tell you the truth, I would say that our teacher leaders in every school are the key to this success. Not only have they embraced it, but they're really using a collegial synergy to push each other along.
When you hand out laptops to everybody, every student in the school system from the third grade to the 12th grade, and they get to keep these laptops for the duration of the school year 24/7, they take them home with them, you provide them with a book bag and a computer a pouch to put them in, they have to use those to carry them around. When you do that, how do you know they're actually using them all the time for work versus playing Angry Birds or being on Facebook? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, we do block certain sites, as all school districts do, because of CIPA, which is the Children's Internet Protection Act. So we protect our students in terms of content that they can get to. Do kids play games? I'm sure they do. But they would be doing that whether it was our device or not. But we've seen that students still use their device for instruction. We have a learning management system, Angel by Blackboard, where kids can collaborate with each other, with their teachers. Parents can log in and see students' grades and see students' assignments. And we see the use of Angel after hours almost as great as it is during school. Hmm. We even have the ability now for our teachers to do a live chat. Like if they're having an exam the next day or a test the next day, a teacher may go in and say, okay, I'm going to host this live chat tonight so you can ask questions to review for your test. But many times, the teacher just kind of sits back and the kids talk to each other on the live chat. And they're answering each other's questions as they review for the test. So the ability that they have to collaborate and communicate with each other is just immense when they have this tool.
Now, you're not buying little cheap $200 Chromebook notebook computers that you can pick up at Best Buy. You're buying MacBooks. These are expensive machines. Do you find that the students take care of them? They keep track of them? They don't lose them? They don't seriously damage them or have a school bus run under them because they're just throwing their book bag around? I mean, you know, how have they handled these machines?
As you mentioned, you know, passing out, you know, 4,500, 5,000 machines is quite a task. But during that, before any student gets a laptop, they and their parents have to sit through a training. And we talk about everything from ethical use of the technology to what your responsibility is in terms of taking care of it. We have school rules about how you carry it in your book bag and it's zipped and, you know, on both shoulders to take care of it. But what we've really found now is that the culture has changed where kids value this machine and they know that what they are going to do in class depends on this machine. And so they treat it as their own. We do take up the machines at the end of the year, but they get their same computer back next year.
Oh, so they don't get a hand-me-down from some kid who ruined it.
Exactly. Now, you know, when high school seniors graduate, we do roll those machines down to fourth grade, but we clean them and make sure they're all in good working order.
Right.
But otherwise, kids keep the same machine for 4 years. And so they value it as their own, and they're going to take care of it.
For the kids who don't have computers at home because they can't afford them, summer must be horrible. Is it? I mean, do they want to come back to school just to get their computer back?
You know, Mike, I have to tell you that one of the – when I look at this whole process over the years, one of the things that I really will hold dear for my entire life. And we have our distribution when we're deploying the computers in August, and we do distribute them a week or a week and a half before school starts. And it's truly like Christmas in August. The kids are excited. The parents are there. And there is this sense of, you know, this if this is part of the order of our world now, so that we do see students saying, I can't wait. And we hear things like students, I've been waiting for weeks to get here. So there is this sense of positive anticipation about the school year, about having this resource. And we do, we have increased and try to build in a lot of summer programming for students that don't have some of the opportunities and don't have the technology at home. But just recently, our local broadband provider, we now provide any student that did not have wireless at home, our local provider has stepped up and said, we're providing this free of charge to every single student that doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. So now we're, I believe, the first district in the nation connected with a device in school 100% and to home at 100%.
One of the problems with technology is that it ages out quickly. Technological advances make the computer that you bought yesterday obsolete in about 3 months. How do you stay current, or at least make purchasing decisions that will allow the devices to have a really long, useful life?
Well, I think part of that is, we were joking about Mac, but part of it is the fact that it's a Mac. We use the 11-inch MacBook Air. It is an extremely robust machine. We've been extremely happy with it and how it has held up. We do lease our machines for 4 years, and this goes back to that budget thing that Dr. Edwards was talking about earlier. Since we build it into our operational budget, we know what our lease payment is every year, and it doesn't change, but it also allows us to build in the refresh. So that we know we're going to keep this device for 4 years. After that 4 years, we're going to go to the next device. And that helps us, you know, plan for the future. We're in our third year of the 4 years on this particular machine. And as I said, it's been very robust. It's held up well, even, you know, with teenagers and moving them around and stuff. It's been a great machine so far.
And Mike, one of the things that when we look at the total cost of ownership, and I do think it's important that school officials look at this not just through the lens of academics and instruction, but also through a business model. And when we look at the total cost of ownership, the Mac platform offers a suite of interactive functionality within the software that if we go with a PC, you end up buying that and adding it to it. So what we
You're talking about the Office suite, right?
Correct. Okay. And we use the iLife suite. And what we have found out, our students absolutely love building digital projects. And that's a big emphasis of our work, students building multimedia projects. I was out visiting at Lowe's corporate office a couple of years ago and saw the project teams at work. Well, that's what our classrooms look like, project teams at work building things together.
Dr. Mark Edwards is Superintendent of the Year in North Carolina and the Superintendent of Mooresville Graded Schools. Scott Smith is their Chief Technology Officer. We're going to come back and talk more about the digital conversion that's been going on there for about 6 or 7 years and the success they've experienced with it and more. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and My Fox Carolina's Primetime on WJZY. It's interactive, informative, and new. My Fox Carolinas is on TV, on mobile devices, and on the web at myfoxcarolinas.com. And Queen's University of Charlotte offering 16 graduate programs. Registration for upcoming info sessions for communications, business, or interior design available at queens.edu. Actor Philip Seymour Hoffman's death from an apparent heroin overdose shocked us all. What's behind the sharp rise in heroin use in the United States? And debate over what to do about it. The topic in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you have something to say or add to our topic this morning, the digital convergence of education. A good place to start is WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. And we're coming right back.
Public Radio goes to the ends of the earth to bring you the heart of the story. We're on the ground and in the mix, even in harm's way. Through conflict and chaos, we investigate, examine, and explore. We don't rest until every side gets their say. The world is a complicated place. Public Radio delivers vital news from every corner of the globe.
Stay connected with global and local news throughout the day on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today, Dr. Mark Edwards, superintendent of the Mooresville Graded Schools, and Scott Smith, their chief technology officer. Tim in Wesley Chapel emails, could you ask your guests to comment on your departmental relationship with the District Board of Education and, in turn, how the Board of Education fares with the county commissioners in relation to funding your technology and other school needs and initiatives?
Well, we have had a tremendous level of support from our school board. And, you know, you referenced earlier our motto, Every Child, Every Day. And to me, that really is kind of the foundational directional element for all of us. And our board really lives by that. And they have been enthusiastic about building in frameworks for professional development, focusing forward. And so we've had great leadership from our school board. We have worked effectively with our county commission now in terms of ultimately the funding we have. It's interesting, earlier we referenced we rank 100th. We've dropped now. We're 110th in funding now out of 115 districts. So we've been able to manage this with a very modest amount of funding. But I do think that our elected officials, both the county commissioners, Mooresville Town Commission, are very proud of the work that we've done. They've also seen a phenomenon called education tourism, where thousands of people have come into Mooresville over the past several years and brought in millions of dollars to this district. It's a phenomenon that people are pretty excited about, seeing a constant flow of resources coming into the community.
Well, I want to spend just a few minutes here with one of the members of your school board in Mooresville. Leon Pridgen joins us by phone. Leon, welcome to the program. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Mike. And good morning. And good morning, Dr. Edwards, Dr. Smith.
Morning, Mr. Pridgen.
How long have you been on the school board, Mr. Pridgen?
I am very new to the school board. I was elected in November, and so I have had 3 meetings, and so I'm enjoying my experience, but I've also been involved with the school district for a number of years.
And do you have kids in schools?
I have two children that have graduated from the Mooresville Graded School District.
Yeah. So when you heard about this digital conversion, this was well before you were on the school board, what was your first reaction to it?
I am a writer, and I had a little bit of hindrance, a little reluctance. And the very first meeting that we had, and not the first meeting, but one of the early meetings, that Dr. Edwards introduced this idea. And because of that, I was a little reserved about, well, we're taking textbooks out of class. We're not going to have books. It's not the way that I learned. And that lasted until another parent expressed the thought that they didn't think there was a need for it. Well, Dr. Edwards pressed them and asked, well, how many people would you say have computers in their home and have access? And this individual parent said, probably 75%. And when he mentioned that, he automatically discounted 25% of the people that were there. And I thought about that for a few seconds, and I said, well, when I look at my community, and I happen to have computers at home, but there were a lot of kids who came by the house to hang out. They'd use my computers. But when I used it, they couldn't. And I was willing to bet that 25% of the communities that were like mine had computers, 75% did not. Mm-hmm. So I automatically then, I said, it doesn't matter what we have to do. My decision was made. And I told Dr. Edwards, whatever it took, whatever you needed from me, I'm there to support that effort. So we could get this technology in the kids' hands.
Now, I know that as a parent of somebody of two children in the system, and now as a school board member, even though you joined the board well after this initiative was underway, it seems to me that the stakes here to move not only to buy the technology or to lease the technology and roll it out, but also just to take this approach to education, that the stakes are really high here. I mean, I was a student when new math came in. That was an approach that did not last long, but it had an impact, and I'd say almost a negative impact on some of us who lived through it. What if this hadn't worked?
I never even thought about that, to be honest with you. The goal was, when, as Dr. Edwards said, the school motto is every child, every day. And when we put that at the forefront of what we were doing or attempting to do, and knew that the end result was going to be for the benefit of those students, those faces that we knew and saw and some that we didn't. It was never a consideration for me. I know that there were a lot of folks who had that as a thought. That was some of the pushback. But the great thing that Dr. Edwards and the administrative staff and everybody in the schools, it was a complete buy-in. Everybody understood what we were doing. And then there was inclusion with the community. Everybody felt like they had a stake. They were part of trying to make this successful.
Is that something that can only be achieved at a school system the size of the Morrisville graded schools? How many schools in the system, Doctor?
We have 8 schools, Mike, but I will tell you.
How many students?
We have 6,000 students, okay. Although I referenced earlier the work in Henrico, and that was a district of about 50,000.
Okay.
But what's interesting, just last week we had a large entourage from Charlotte MEC schools. We had 75 principals up for a visit. I'm working very closely with Heath Morrison and mm-hmm. Valerie Truesdale, as Dr. Smith mentioned. But right now, our staff, we're training Houston, the 7th largest district in the nation, and they're getting ready to roll out the same type of program. And we've had visitors from New York, Miami, Chicago, and most of the very large urban districts in the country trying to replicate this same model.
And what seems to be the stumbling block? Obviously, we haven't done it here in Charlotte MEC, and you are mentioning that you are working with Dr. Morrison at Charlotte MEC and other people on his staff. What seems to be the bugaboo here? Is it money? Is it will? Is it fear of the unknown? What is it?
I think it's complicated. I think there's a combination. I think, one, people do have to figure out the money. They have to figure out, okay, how can we make this work, which is absolutely doable in any district, and we've had, again, hundreds that have replicated. But I do think building the culture, it takes, Mr. Pridgen mentioned this sense of community buy-in, and Leon served on our Education Foundation on a parent advisory. And we had a lot of what I would say, energized debate about the whole process. We changed policies because of parental input. But building that sense of community buy-in, that sense of community investment in this, is part of the equation, and it just takes time. I do think we'll see great things happening. We see great examples all over this state, all over the country, but I do think it takes time, and I do think the new focus, and that's one of the things that we're really trying to share with other districts, it's building a culture that understands change management mm-hmm. and then hitches its future to preparing children for their future and not our past.
Leon, since you've been involved in the schools before you were on the school board in Mooresville, do you find that the school board is merely a supportive device for Dr. Edwards, or are you more proactive? Are you pushing him to move faster and farther into this digital world?
Obviously, I think that we have to support the efforts, but we are pushing. We are still continually looking to say, what's going to be the next thing? What's our next challenges? Obviously, we've had Common Core come in, and that's been in effect. But I have no doubt that with the leadership that we have in place, and it's leadership at all levels, that our students are still going to be able to maintain, benefit, and keep moving forward. So the idea is we're always looking to say, how do we reach that other 10% that we didn't have? How do we reach that other 2% that needs that push? So we're always looking to see how can we better ourselves.
Leon Pridgen, a member of the Mooresville Graded School District School Board, thank you for being with us. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Richard emails a couple of quick questions. What's the socioeconomic makeup of the school population, and what percentage of the student body receives free lunch? If the school district is predominantly homogeneous, middle class, I'm not sure it's all about digital. So answer that question.
Sure. Good question, Mike. And our demographics, it's interesting. Our free and reduced lunch at the elementary level is a little over 50%. As a district, it's over 40%. But we do have students, particularly at the secondary level, who qualify for government subsidy, but families choose not to participate. But we're a working class community, and I would say that in addition to, where we look 40 to 50% that qualify for government subsidy, we have another 20% of our families that are really to both parents working, sometimes working double jobs. So we're a working class community and really representative of the state and not that dissimilar from Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
You report that since the launch of the Digital Conversion Initiative, the number of students receiving proficient ratings on state exams has increased 20%, and the number of schools meeting adequate yearly progress has increased from 2 to 6. Last June's graduation rate was 91%, compared to 77% 4 years ago. I don't know what it is at CMS, but 91% is high. All of that from digital learning, really.
Look, again, Mike, I'd have to say it's a combination of factors. I do want to update that data. Our graduation rate for the 2013 year, some of that data was delayed, was 93.4.
So it's up again.
And we're up to second in the state. And I do want to mention this, that I think something that's interesting. Back when Leon didn't mention this, but one of the things he brought to my attention 7 years ago, that we had a great disparity between graduation rates of African-American students and students in poverty and other students, and concerns about that from the community. Last year, our graduation rate for African-American students was 97.8, number one in the state of North Carolina, and our graduation rate for students from poverty was 91%. So we really do believe that a combination of great teaching, great teacher effort, student effort, digital resources has led us to a performance that we're proud of. We still have work to do, but we know that we're on the right track and our students are thriving in this environment.
We live in an interconnected world now, and much of what these computers can do is because of the internet. And I know that you have a wireless throughout the school system with fairly – what is your broadband capacity to support 5,000 or 6,000 computers all going at the same time?
Well, Mike, it continues to grow, actually. When we started this 6 years ago, I have gigabit fiber between all of our schools, and we had 100 meg pipe to the internet. And we quickly outgrew that, upgraded to 250 megs. 2 years ago, we went to 500 meg, and this year we have a gigabit pipe for you know, 6,000 devices in the district. That's a lot of bandwidth. But my philosophy on that is kind of like the movie Field of Dreams. If you build it, they'll come. And kids today, you know, when they click on it, they want it to work. And again, it's my job to make sure that it works when they click
it. So what happens when they go home? Because if some of these kids couldn't afford a computer, then they certainly can't afford internet service. What happens when they go home and have to do homework using these devices and they can't get on the internet?
So that goes back to what Dr. Edwards was saying earlier, that, you know, this year MiConnect, which is our local internet provider, stepped up to the plate. Again, building that culture in our community, they've stepped up to the plate and are offering free internet to those students on free and reduced lunch in our district. So we're almost 100% of all of our kids have internet access at home. But the other community side of that is when we were building the support for this, Chamber of Commerce was involved. Economic development was involved. So local businesses are like, hey, all these kids are going to have laptops. If we put up an access point in our, you know, pizza shop, the kids will come eat pizza and get online. Same thing with the town of Mooresville. They were a great partner of ours, and they have since opened up all their public facilities, whether it's the library or the Citizen Center or the police department, and even here recently in the last couple of years, now the city parks. So you can go to a city park and get online. All of our kids have figured that out, and they figured out where they can go to get online to be connected.
You've also outfitted the classrooms, K-3 classrooms, with smart boards, smart slates, and something called smart response devices. I don't know what they are, so why don't you fill me in?
Sure, absolutely. So in our K-3 classrooms, we have the smart board, which is the interactive whiteboard where teachers use their technology and use their laptop, and it's on the board in front, and they can grab that image and manipulate it on their board. They also have a slate, which is it's a precursor to the iPad, long before the iPad was ever invented, but they can use that slate to manipulate their smart board from around the classroom as kind of the mobile conductor in their classroom, if you will. And then students also have response devices. So teachers can put up a question and kids can vote, kind of like some of these game shows where people will vote A, B, C, D on who wants to be a millionaire. The kids can kind of do that kind of thing in class. And so it gets interaction from the students at an early age.
Wow. The school system asserts that children are gaining valuable critical thinking, problem-solving, and higher-order cognition skills. This is coming at a time when critics have said that all this testing that we have to do now to teach to the test mentality has left students with less time to develop critical thinking skills. So how does this technology facilitate that, and how do you work that into a curriculum that still has to be responsible to state and national testing mandates?
Well, you know, Mike, we have been very attentive to using data and information to inform our instruction. But I'll share this little vignette, I think, as a perfect example. Last year, we had a group of visitors in, and they were talking to either a fourth or fifth grade little girl with a big old ponytail. And this guy walked up to her and said, well, what are you working on? She said, well, I'm researching about who was the first female candidate for president. And she asked the guy, she said, do you know who it was? He said, well, yes, I believe I do. And he kind of smiled. He said, I believe it was Shirley Chisholm. Hmm. She said, no, but that's a good guess. And that's what most people would guess. And then she went on and just was this veritable stream of information about a candidate in 1878. She said she ran for president. She goes on and on and on and on. And everybody was just like, wow. So she finished talking about it. And the guy said, that's amazing. And she showed her presentation and data and some archival resources. And the guy said, I bet you'll make an A on this project. She said, no, I won't. And he said, why? And she said, because I was just doing it for fun. I might run for president someday. And I'm thinking about this now.
Wow. It makes you scratch your heads as to why other districts haven't done this yet. Do you think they will? Will CMS get on the bandwagon quickly or not so quickly? Very quickly.
I think they're working on it, and I've got a lot of confidence in my good friend Heath Morris.
All right. Dr. Mark Edwards, Superintendent, and Scott Smith, Dr. Scott Smith, Chief Technology Officer of the Mooresville Graded School District. Congratulations on your success. Thanks for the hour.
Thank you.